We present the news quiz with your chairman, Simon Hoggart.
Hello, welcome again to the news quiz. We start with the sign seen on the concourse of Liverpool Street Station, read by Brian Perkins.
Main public toilets on the station are closed from the 6th of April for approximately 8 weeks, whilst major refurbishment takes place. Alternative facilities are available in the roadway between platforms 10 and 11.
Thanks to Tony Whitwood and Norwich for that. Let's meet the teams now. Please welcome first, on my right, Francis Ween and John Snow. And on my left, Alan Corran and Andy Hamilton. Francis, which Merchants of London produced a dot comedy of errors?
Aha! It's this great tragedy in the City of London. Last day of the tax year as well, they all wanted to spend their Christmas bonuses. And the computers fell, the whole city ground to a halt for about 8 hours, I think. And there was a wonderful thing in the Times report of it on the front page. It said that stockbrokers had been deprived of tens of millions of pounds in transaction fees. This was the main story as far as the Times go. I thought, gosh, it makes you weep, doesn't it? Poor stockbrokers.
They're not stockbrokers, of course. When you said stockbroker, tears came into my eyes. Stockbrokers were bloke with chalk-striped trousers and black jacket and a bowl. Looked like Captain Mannering.
Not anymore,
and all these fearful, bracered cyber prats. He really wanted to go down. I mean, in the old days, it wouldn't have mattered. Stockbrokers would have got on robbing us. But they... These people weren't able to. I was very pleased it went down. I rather thought it was a Gates conspiracy. Gates, Microsoft having hit the deck and everybody wondering what was going to be traded on NASDAQ the next day. Someone at Microsoft had pressed a button and everything blew a fuse.
The amazing thing is you go for a reaction in a dealing room and you're introduced to the managing director. Well, I think it fell to pieces because after the big crash of the NASDAQ, things went a bit wrong, you know.
It does worry me. It's been a worrying week on the markets, isn't it? Because the market is now populated by young risk takers, isn't it? And that seems to be part of the problem. They do everything instantly. What's the word?
Spivs.
But they... I was also reading there's a lot of unemployment in the countryside. And I think what we should do is boot out the young risk takers and get some slow rustic types in there. So they are. What, you want to buy several million? Hold on, I'll just get a pencil. And I think that would reduce this problem of market volatility that we seem to have.
When they pose for things like Channel 4 News, these people, they're all trying to look frantically busy as if the whole world economy depends on them shouting and screaming for the next 2 seconds. And then they're out of action for an entire day. Nothing happens. The world carries on regardless. They could stop work for a year. And none of us
It'll happen.
Be
same thing will happen when Blair takes his paternity leave. You
exactly.
Watch.
2 points to Francis. John, welcome to the news quiz. Who neglected to tell us just how unhealthy their finances were? Francis is allowed to scribble a note.
Are you? Are you scribbling?
Well... Would it be the NHS?
It would.
Would it be...
Oh, the 200,
this
the 200 million.
National Audit Office report?
Yes.
You know about this, you're a newsreader.
Yes, the 200 million. Yes. So what comes in must go out. 2 billion in, 200 million out. It was an elaborate scam.
All the money that Gordon Brown and Tony Blair... whichever one it is that's running the country, has given to the health service, is going to go straight out again on medical negligence claims. They put a lot of taxpayers' money into the health service, and it goes out to patients, which is what they promised. It's just the patients who sue that get it.
It's going to be impossible to go to your doctor with anything, isn't it? Because they're going to be legally obliged to say, well, I think it's just flu, but it could be a terminal illness, but don't quote me on that.
Well, if you're in America, they'd say, have the op anyway.
Yeah, and have your breasts done at the same time while you're in there.
One senior surgeon accused of gross negligence said he'd be straight on his mobile to his lawyer once he'd opened up the patient and got it back. Another senior surgeon totally rejected any suggestion of malpractice on his part, saying most of his patients who made these accusations hadn't got a leg to stand on. So 2 points to Francis and John. Andy, who believes the key to electoral success in Britain is a woman on the southeast coast of America?
It's Florida woman. the latest in this generation of, who was it, Mondeo Man. And there was another one, wasn't it, John? You'll know.
Worcester Woman.
Who was Worcester? That's a cartoon strip, isn't it?
No, Worcester Woman.
Bottle of sauce, half bottle of sauce, half woman there. What was Worcester Woman? What does she do?
Worcester Woman was in the lead up to the last election. She was made redundant in various potteries.
But that's just one vote. Why were they after that?
But that's what they've done with the Florida Woman. It's just one vote. They've extrapolated from a very small sample, i.e. Michael Ashcroft, because he lives in Florida. And so I think, God, Florida's full of these fantastically rich British people who will give us £1 million a year, so if we can just woo them, they'll all do the same as Ashcroft.
Well, having been told that he couldn't be Baron Ashcroft of Belize, he's now going to be Baron Ashcroft of Florida and have a sex change.
Is there a tug of love war on the part of his relatives to bring him back from Florida? Like that little kid. I love the idea of Ashcroft arriving on a rubber inner tube off Florida with his money, saying, I'm Duke Ashcroft of Belize. Give me house room. And his mum saying, no, he's got to be repatriated with his father and his family. What a ghastly man he is.
Mr. Haig made a number of speeches this week showing off his David Beckham hairstyle. Similarities to the Manchester United sex symbol don't stop there. Beckham also has a wife who's more famous than he is, and he too will never become Prime Minister. The Tory leader accused Mr. Blair of being a control freak. Freak is not a word that should be used lightly by a man who leads a party which contains John Redwood, Michael Portillo and Anne Widdecombe. Alan, why might breaking the underworld's code of silence prove to be quite an enigma?
BMW U-boats have been launched into the Atlantic and they've taken the precaution of pinching the Enigma machine so we can't find out about them. I know, last week they nicked... someone nicked laptops that were left lying around by pissed MI6 agents. And quite clearly, they couldn't make them work. They're like me in laptops. I mean, they took them home to try to find out the workings of the British Secret Service, and all they got was hello and have a nice day, and got 3,000 tons of anthracite delivered to the man next door. It's very complicated. So they went to Bletchley, because they'd seen 38 different BBC Two documentaries about Bletchley Park and read all the books. And they found this upright typewriter, which cracked the German code, I'm very sorry to say, and enabled us to win the war. And they've got the bloke who took it, but it's the British police. They've got the bloke, but they haven't got the machine. I don't know why they haven't. I mean, if it were in Germany, they'd have him downstairs in the basement by now, and they'd find out where the machine was. But it wasn't me. I didn't take it.
Where are you going to find a fence for something like that?
Enigmas are us, you mean?
Yeah.
Tricky.
.com.
I watched some of those documentaries, and what was wonderful, I thought, was that the Germans constructed the most brilliant code-generating machine that they gave to, you know, all their agents. But, of course, the downfall was that you needed to go through procedures to make the code impenetrable. And, of course, at Bletchley, they just waited for the lazy German code operator who couldn't be asked to tap in the front keys. And you just thought, how very like life.
We start round two with a cutting from the Times.
During his visit in May last year, the chief constable was escorted by Dutch police to three different cafes and shown cannabis menus listing different flavours from a variety of countries. He took the two-day trip as part of his research for the Inquiry.
Thanks to Jill Evans of Dorchester. Francis, which director is thinking over a return to Rover?
Well, this
I need the name.
Another BMW question.
It is.
Is it that chap John Tower or something?
You've just given me the name. 2 points.
That's the answer. Jolly good. The unions are right behind him. He's now a public-spirited chappy who's going to save Rover from being taken over by unsuitable people, unlike those nice Germans who used to own it.
What it illustrates is the danger of using euphemisms. Because apparently the BMW executives say they made it clear to Mr. Byers that they were going to shut down Longridge because they said, Minister, it is 12:05. Well, first of all, technically it should have been midnight because he probably just thought they wanted to send out for sandwiches. But if they just said, we are going to close the place, that would have been fine. But 12:05. And also, if you decide to close something, surely what you say, if you're hinting, is it is 12:05, don't you? I blame the Germans. You see, if they had a proper language and didn't put verbs at the end and all that, then The other thing is, someone should have explained to them, there's no point hinting if the person you're talking to is too thick to understand a hint. You think they're doing a lot of winking and kind of, you know, drawing their fingers across their throats as they're talking.
I don't know, a German hint is usually two blokes on a motorcycle combination going over a border into an orchard. I didn't think they're not a hinting sort of race, Andy. You don't understand them.
I think we should do a news quiz special. We go to Dusseldorf.
Yes.
Just for the challenge of it.
We could drop by Dakotas and just the entire news quiz team coming down over Dusseldorf. I like that. Yeah. Land at Omaha Beach and work our way inland.
With lots of obscure cuttings from Gloucestershire papers. I could sit there in silence for hours and hours. That'd teach them.
Andy, who needed to keep their hands free to slip on their radiation suits?
Well, this is the story, presumably, about the concern as to whether or not, just generally, is it bad for you to hold a source of radiation very close to your brain, because the jury's out on that one. I mean, it is very difficult. It's hard to assess the evidence. And the concern is that these hands-free phones and these shields don't really help reduce the radiation. In fact, they multiply it and point it directly at your frontal lobe. I think all the evidence is anecdotal, but there is obviously some evidence that it affects short-term memory, that there is short-term memory loss. We know that because people who use them forget there are other people on the train. So that's what it's about. But yet again, you see that form of words where they say there is no proven link, and your mind goes back to asbestos and tobacco. It's always been the beginning of the story. I'm just frightening everybody now. People binning their mobile phones out of their bags. Just hand them down the front, I'll collect them. And we can have a mobile amnesty.
It's said to be the equivalent of putting your head in a microwave oven, isn't it? And actually, most of the I'm on the train brigade, when you look at them, they are the kind of people who probably would do that. Get home, think, oh, it's a bit cold in here, I think I'll just put my head in the oven.
The latest research by Which magazine found that hands-free mobile phones direct 3 times more radiation into the brain than conventional mobiles, contradicting all previous research. Canadian experiments into the radiation dangers using mice proved inconclusive, mainly because the mice kept getting shushed on the train every time they took their mobiles out. John, who thinks he can manage Auntie all by himself?
Ah, this is Greg Dyke. He's going to remove all the managers of the BBC, and it will be completely unmanaged and unmanageable. But as it's that already, it'll be fine.
I'm very worried because he's going to clamp down on the moaning culture at the BBC. Well, that leaves no place for me. That's what I do. I come in.
And he's cracking down on the second chauffeur as well, which might affect him.
That's true.
Yeah. He says from now on, executives can only have one chauffeur-driven car rather than one for the spouse as well, which apparently has been the case until now under the efficient Mr. Burt. Gosh, how we miss him. Lord Burt. He should be arraigned before the War Crimes Tribunal.
You say that now.
I said that now.
Easy now, isn't it?
But a lot of the BBC executives who served under John Burt are still in place, so presumably they're all sitting at meetings with this voice in their head saying, don't use the word outsourcing, don't use the word outsourcing, and all the other Burt vocabulary.
It's all, I was only obeying orders, because the same team still running the BBC, apart from this Dyke, but they're now all born again, free, happy, clappy, Dykes, groovy guys, whereas before they were management consultants with clipboards. And they explained that Burt forced them to do that, to talk gibberish and mess up the BBC, and now they can be their true selves.
How much of this is going to stay in this programme? Oh, no.
Mr. Dyke has denied that his time as chairman of Channel 5 will affect BBC programming before proudly announcing new season highlights, the 9 o'clock nudes, Electric Blue Peter, and the return of that perennial favourite, One Man and His Extremely Friendly Dog. Andy, who arrived at Manchester Airport, ready for a strip search.
Oh, is this unfortunate couple? Oh, I don't want to do jokes about this. This is just... because it could happen to anybody. Be honest. Put your hands up. Come on. Let he
it can't happen to anybody. They did it in an airline seat. Once I am strapped into an airline seat with a tray down, I cannot even move my arms to open those little things of milk. So they're squirt all over me. I think they're Machin and Holt, and they should get medals for being able to do it on a plane, whatever they did.
Yeah, you're right, actually. It's difficult, particularly if it's after the food's come, because you've got the rum bar and all that there. But I was puzzled by the story, because the one of the witnesses, a lady in front, and I don't know, Alan, maybe you read it in more detail than me, but she complained of hearing meowing noises. Now, is that something I don't know about? Meowing. I don't know what that could have meant, really. But anyway,
I think they were they were the only people in history who actually watched the safety demonstration and took it literally, where it said, in emergency, lean forward, put your head down and assume the position.
And if the seatbelt doesn't inflate automatically, you just put your lips to the spout and blow. And then the whistle goes off. Probably what the meow was. He probably was taking precaution for the life belt. And it squeaked.
All right, then, we'll explain.
They didn't know one another. They'd never met.
No, I know. Explain this. It went on for 5 hours. Does the meowing help them go on longer? What?
This elderly woman passenger in the seat in front only complained about the meowing after being struck on the back of the head by a foot.
Quite disgusting, really. I mean, decent people do it in the lavatory on a plane, don't they, Andy?
You're not allowed to smoke in the lavatory.
You can meow without setting off the alarms.
Amanda Holt and David Machin were fined for their drunken behaviour aboard an American Airlines flight. During the flight, one passenger heard this strange meowing sound from behind her. And if you need to hear the rest of the joke, tune into any episode of Are You Being Served? A lady across the aisle from the couple was said to be outraged, though her husband was less offended. Eventually, cabin crew persuaded him to put his camcorder away. Alan, which single man from 1300 could have been the inventor of psychology?
It's a man called Sykes.
It is.
who was born in the 13th century and put it about a bit, as a result of which all the Sykeses in the world are related to one another. It's this one Sykes gene. And Sykes, I understand, is Yorkshire for bog or swamp or something. But anyway, this chap did it. And you can now, I mean, it's assumed that because of the DNA testing, you can make certain assumptions about Sykeses. And they hope to use it to catch criminals. Given the way the police are, they will probably let Bill Sykes have his own show and put Eric Sykes in chokey for 30 years. But everybody called Sykes is related to this man in the 13th century. As indeed is everybody called Corrin.
But it does depend on the fidelity of all the Mrs. Sykeses, because if Mrs. Sykes conceives a boy that carries this DNA by some other man and then calls it Sykes, it throws the whole thing out of kilter.
No, it's only half of them. Then 50% of Mrs. Sykes's were slags, but the other 50% have produced Eric Sykes, which is no bad thing.
The gist of his argument is that anyone with the same surname is related to anyone else with the same surname, and this is going to be used in murder inquiries from now on. They take this seriously. Andy Hamilton, Diddy David Hamilton. Actually are related to Peters, though, aren't you, John?
I am. We share the same DNA.
He got the mad professor chromosome, and you got the garish Thai chromosome.
Does that mean I am related to Neil Hamilton? Because I'm going to bloody change my name.
You're thinking about Christine meowing, aren't you?
Professor Sykes' research showed that he had identical DNA to more than half of his namesakes. He suggested that infidelity has to have been extremely low among the Sykeses for 700 years. So don't try to trace your ancestors if your surname happens to be Norris. So the scores at the end of round three are Alan and Andy 11, but Francis and John lead with 13 points.
And before we start the final round, here's a cutting from the Wisley Parish Newsletter.
This afternoon we'll be meeting in the south and north ends of the church. Children will be baptised at both ends.
Thanks to Mrs. Thorpe of West Byfleet, John, whose change of heart had jaws dropping everywhere.
Oh, Jaws, oh, blow, Peter Benchley.
Yes.
He's apologised. At last.
Yes?
10,000 copies of the book, and now he's come out and said, I'm just terribly sorry to the great shark. I've upset it a lot. Mm-hmm. It's a frightfully nice thing. It's never killed anybody. And I lied.
I read Peter Benchley's account. The key thing is that he regrets having depicted the notion that certain sharks develop a taste for humans, because the reality of it is that very few people die in shark attacks, because the shark sees you in the water, he thinks, oh, there's one of those funny pink seals, and he comes up, takes a bite, and then goes, oh, no, and then swims away again. Very few sharks come back for a second bite.
Sharks are absolute pussies. They just meow.
Also, we're wrapped in, you know, in sort of, we've got swimming trunks and stuff. That probably doesn't taste that nice either.
I thought it was that other Jaws thing. Well, that wonderful jaw, the 370 million year old jaw this week.
Oh, the missing link.
The Latvian jaw, yes. This thing crawled out of a swamp 370 million years ago and into a drawer. Turned up at the Natural History Museum, and they've taken it out, and it's like all of us. And they did a reconstruction, as they do. It's what computers are for when they don't go down. The idea of going down on a computer is rather unsettling. But when they don't go down, they produce this computer enhanced, as Francis says, missing link. It's a thing with no neck and this enormous body. It looks remarkably like Prescott. Prescott, like Sykes, is our common ancestor. Except this thing did actually walk out of the sea, and Prescott doesn't walk much, but he...
It's important, though, in archaeological terms, because it's the first ever bored fish.
Yeah, didn't like it in the water.
So I'll go for a walk.
Yeah.
Grow some legs.
But it isn't, it's Peter Benchley, unfortunately. We
yes.
didn't get anything for that. We didn't even get half a point.
Not
that.
Even for an amusing
Nothing.
Meander. Do we
nope.
get a point there?
So it was Peter Benchley, the author of Jaws, who says he now wishes he'd never written that book and that people should love sharks. He insists that sharks are sensitive, intelligent creatures, which explains why the original ending of Spielberg's Jaws had Robert Shaw and the Great White discussing the works of Proust over a bottle of Lafitte 64. Andy, why did Dark Age Mum go off to Iceland?
Oh, my goodness. Dark Age Mum. Where did Dark Age Mum go? Repeating the question doesn't help, actually, does it? It never works.
What is Dark Age Mum?
Do you want to put the mouth in our misery?
Go on, then.
No. You may have did it.
He's enjoying our misery.
No.
Let Andy wander around it for a bit. Have a go.
Iceland.
Dark Age is nice.
See, it doesn't get very dark. Well, they have the several months of darkness.
6 months of night. Christine Hamilton. I think of the Hamiltons as that. Almost like 20 questions. Let Frances have it.
She went to Iceland.
Yes, Johnny Viking.
Yes?
There was a woman shortage.
Yes?
In the olden days when the Vikings were around. All these chaps with beards called Knut and things. When not pillaging and rampaging, needed to breed to ensure perpetuation of species, didn't have any women, so they had to import them. Well, not exactly plane loads, but shiploads of... sent over from here, from Britain, and various other parts, to Iceland, where they bred to ensure the perpetuation of these Vikings, all of whom were called Sykes.
How do they know this?
Because they found a jawbone somewhere. Research shows that.
All right, then.
We're missing them.
Here's my next question. This happened in the Dark Ages. Aren't we a topical programme? What's going on? And where was this story?
Is it the stock press of the Bayeux Tapestry?
Right, well, I didn't know that. Given the points, let's move on, shall we? Because I'm a bit upset.
It's a discovery by an Oxford team of biological anthropologists that Icelandic Viking warriors were so short of women they took half their female partners from modern-day Britain. Well, not modern-day, obviously. What we call Britain today. Well, 2 points to whoever got that. Alan, why won't you now have to get around to tell the wife you're working late?
It's a pub called the Jolly Traveller. And the owner has bought a phone booth. One of those old red phone booths that smells of urine, like most pubs. Anyway, it's being used for its original purposes. But he's attached a tape recorder to it, which makes noises, not meowing, happily, so that people who are there at the pub can ring up their wife and say, I'm stuck in a traffic jam, and press a button, press button A, and the noise of a traffic jam comes in. Or I'm doing all sorts of other things, and there's shrieks and wails. It's the Jolly Traveller.
I'm stuck in a cattery.
Five points, please.
Public. You want one for the cattery?
You'll get what you're given. And like it. Publican Colin Benham has built a phone kiosk that adds authentic background noises from the CD, such as supermarket, traffic jam, or a busy railway station for people ringing home to say they'll be late. One drinker who used the booth to fool his wife into thinking he was still at the office thought it was fantastic, till he later discovered that he'd been talking to a recording and she was upstairs with the plumber. Before we reveal the final scores, let's hear the cuttings the teams have brought along. Francis.
This is a story from the Formby Times. It's about a sixth former called Timothy Fielding, who's just been selected as chairman of the Crosby and Hightown Young Conservatives. And the Formby Times is very excited. It begins, while other 18-year-olds are spending far too much time in the pub, Timothy Fielding is intent on making the Tory party a farce to be reckoned with in his town.
Well, I have one from the Glasgow Herald, Simon. It says, Dunblane suffers the indignity of being described in the Sterling Observer newspaper as the flashing capital of Central Region. Police had to deal with 11 incidents of indecent exposure in the town last summer, compared with only 4 in Stirling. The situation is put into some perspective by Central's chief constable, Ian Oliver, who said, I am not too concerned, it tends to fall off in the winter.
Let's look at the final scores. Alan and Andy have a creditable 13, but Francis and newcomer John Snow, winners today with 19 points. And with that, goodbye.
Taking part in the news quiz were Alan Corran, Andy Hamilton, Francis Wheen and John Snow. The chairman was Simon Hoggard, and the news was read by me, Brian Perkins. The chairman's script was written by Dave Cohen, Tom Jameson and George Poles. And the producer was Lucy Armitage.